You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Corruption. It's a big word right now, isn't it? It's just on the tip of everybody's tongue. But my question for you, Ron, is who is corrupt? Which side is really the corruption on? They're trying to impeach the President of the United States for corruption, yet there's a whole bunch of corruption coming out on the other side of the table, isn't there?
Well, corruption is not only in their focus group, but it's in our focus group, okay? And yeah, you're right, because I'm just amazed all the time when the Democrats come up with these focus group words such as witness intimidation, corruption, bribery, all of this stuff. But I'm telling you, the chickens are coming home to roost here, young lady, because we're going to get the information from the FISA warrants. There's some brand new breaking information in regards to corruption in the Ukraine involving the companies owned by former Secretary of State John Kerry and Hunter Biden. Okay, it's a big deal. One American News broke the story very recently, and papers are coming, and I have to get my magnifying glass on, okay, because I already saw the copies that were released by some entrepreneur that has something to do with the Ukraine, but basically burned Secretary of State, former Secretary of State,
Kerry,
and Hunter Biden. And I think this is just going deeper into the weeds. It's going to backfire on these Democrats big time.
And you know what? I think that President Trump is absolutely right for the American people to be asking questions about this, because the company Rosemont Seneca Bohai, which is owned and operated by the Kerrys and Hunter Biden, have a huge amount of cash that were coming in off of Ukraine.
No, exactly. And, you know, what are the coinkydinks, right? Of all the nations in the world, and I have to be honest with you, I don't know how many nations there are in the world, but I'm venturing to say there's probably about 250 different countries in
the
world. Yeah, a lot. Why do they pick the Ukraine? Okay, so, you know, with all this stuff about Trump and Russia and Trump and the Ukraine, Trump doesn't have anything to do with Russia. Trump and he doesn't have anything to do with Ukraine. I think the only thing that President Trump had to do with Russia before he was elected is that they're trying to build a hotel in Moscow or someplace like that. But look at the people. And by the way, he wasn't a politician. He wasn't associated with the United States government whatsoever. He's a private individual. He can do business anywhere he wants to do business.
Yes.
And everybody know it's called Trump International for a reason. He had business holdings all over the world. But the people who, I think this is what the American people have to remember. Who is in power at the time and whose relatives are generating money? Who is profiting by this?
Well,
and not small potatoes either. We're talking tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars.
Well, who wouldn't like to make over $80,000 a month? I mean, I can't think of anybody who wouldn't enjoy that. And here's a guy, Hunter Biden, who had no credentials to make any such money. I know that you and I and most of the people that we know work their fannies off to earn a paycheck every single month. We don't get paid that kind of money. And yet here this guy with no credentials goes and gets paid that kind of money. Does anybody think it doesn't have anything to do with his father? And by the way, a couple more big points about this is that, you know, then when the company that he's working for, which is considered corrupt, even by Ukrainian standards, which are pretty low, when they start being investigated, then Biden demands that they fire the prosecutor and brags about it and brags about a quid pro quo right on television.
Yeah, did you hear any of that in the inquiry? right, in the impeachment inquiry? Did you hear any of that whatsoever? Because Adam Shifty Schiff is controlling the gavel.
Yes.
And it just bothers me so much because you've got five people on this congressional panel that well before the establishment of this panel had already gone public and said that they wanted to impeach Trump. So how do you possibly get an impartial group of people to look at what you're doing? I mean, it just, it bothers me on no end. You know, we recently, you know, had a discussion about all the confirmation and the implicit bias with regards to Shifty Schiff and all these people, these Democrats that are on this panel, and how they won't let the Republicans call witnesses. They won't let the Republicans read transcripts. They just did a couple of depositions Friday night you were talking to me about, and they're not releasing those transcripts, right?
Well, they're not releasing those transcripts because they don't fit their narrative. They go in the other direction. They are exculpatory to President Trump. You know, the other thing, after the hearings started, Schiff flew over to California and did a talk, and he told supporters of his that they were going to get Trump out of his golden throne. I mean, talk about bias, okay? This is not some sort of a very serious constitutional crisis, as Nancy Pelosi likes to say. This is a joke. This is a farce. It is a situation that they have tried to do, you know, since the day that Trump got elected. And by the way, the other thing about this whole Ukraine situation, not only have they found all these records with the money that was going to people, and John Kerry is involved too. Now, don't forget that John Kerry was the Secretary of State before Hillary Clinton.
Correct.
So there you go. I mean, it looks like they all were involved in pay for play everywhere around the world.
And, you know, don't forget that John Kerry is the same person that after he finished his term as Secretary of State has pretty much been the boy for the Iranians, okay? Because he
is the guy,
I don't even understand this. I don't understand how the United States government can let a United States citizen, especially a high-profile politician like John Kerry, go to another country and basically give them pointers on how to defeat the United States in our negotiations with them. I don't understand that. To me, it's almost treasonous.
Well, I agree with you, and I can't see anybody that shouldn't agree with you, especially with one of our foremost enemies in the world. You want to come at Trump about Russia, and you want to come at Trump about Ukraine, but yet you don't say anything to John Kerry about what he's doing against this country and against the President of the United States and against our American interests around the world?
No, you know, and I agree with you. And, you know, to me, I try to look at things very, very simply. And when I talk to people, you know, as an expert, I found that when you have really complicated issues, you really got to synthesize it. And you got to, you know, succinctly tell people or discuss with people or point out to people what some of the issues are here. And the American people seem to be missing a lot of, you know, really critical information. And, you know, I know this is brought up on numerous occasions, but it just seems to be lost. And here's my point. What the heck has President Trump done that is wrong? We have an existing treaty with the Ukraine, a corruption, anti-corruption treaty with the Ukraine, where it is the obligation and responsibility of the President of the United States to determine whether there is any corruption in the Ukraine that has any nexus or connection to the United States of America or any of our citizens. Does this mean that Joe Biden, because he's a political opponent of the President of the United States, that he gets a pass on this? I don't understand this. This is the President of the United States' job. I look at this as coincidental.
Well, I also look at it as coincidental. And when Joe Biden was telling them to fire this prosecutor, I mean, I look at that as criminal. That is a quid pro quo. But also, just to tell you how much everybody knew in the Obama administration, you were telling me, and you can tell me more about it, about the way that they instructed their ambassador when she came on, and about Hunter Biden's participation at Burisma.
Well, yeah. Well, what happened was, if anybody brought up the fact that Hunter Biden was involved in some, let's just say, nefarious business dealings with the Ukrainians, and that there was some obvious conflicts of interest, and it was damaging to the interests of the United States, the vice president himself, those people were told, hey, you know, this isn't a good time to talk about this, because at the time, if you remember, Joe Biden's eldest son had brain cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they said, hey, you know, don't put more pressure on the old man. You know, you should feel bad for him. His kid's dying of cancer. Hey, you know, I feel bad for that. Sure, I would feel bad for any father. But for God's sakes, let's look at the bigger thing here. And that is, he's just not any guy. This guy is the vice president of the United States. He's the second in command of the entire country. His son is absolutely involved in nefarious dealings with a foreign government and a corrupt foreign government. And even Hunter Biden acknowledged that this was not a good thing. And his father acknowledged that this was not a good thing, after denying that he had any knowledge whatsoever that his son was involved with Burisma and, you know, and the energy, you know, the energy company and everything. This is all crap.
And Ambassador Yovanovitch acknowledged that when she was briefed on these situations, it was only this situation out of all the countries in the world that she was briefed on about Hunter Biden. She wasn't briefed on anything else, but they made sure to tell her about Hunter Biden being there and working with Burisma. The other thing that they've discovered, Ron, is they have discovered that there, and it's going to all come out, they have discovered an entire, I guess I would say, cache of documents that document the Democrats trying to get dirt on President Trump as he was being elected.
That's correct. As he was being elected.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't even the president of the United States. Hadn't he been elected to government? And they were out there, and Hillary Clinton was paying money, and the DNC was paying money.
The DNC was paying
through their operatives to try to find dirt on then-candidate, you know, Donald J. Trump.
So why is that not the same thing that they are exactly thinking about trying to impeach President Trump for? Why are they not guilty of that? And that's why I say, you know, when we're talking about corruption, and that word is just so used every day, all day long, really, who is it that's corrupt? To my mind, it is the corruption people are the ones who are calling the kettle black here. I mean, they are the ones that are guilty of this.
And you're exactly right. And so far we've had at least three witnesses. You know, we've had William Taylor, who was the top U.S. diplomat to the Ukraine. We've had George Kent, who was the former deputy assistant secretary of state for Europe and Eurasia. And then, you know, most recently we've had former ambassador to the Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. And none of these people, when asked directly by people like, you know, Republican Representative Jim Jordan, by Alice Stefanik, right?
Elise,
mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Stefanik, and Devin Nunes, and even Chris Stewart, all of those Republicans, asked them directly, what do you know specifically? Give us one bit of information about President Trump being involved in corruption, being involved in bribery, being involved in witness intimidation, being involved in any type of crime in the Ukraine. And they all said categorically no.
Well, and when Kent and Taylor were asked directly if they knew of any impeachable crime that President Trump committed, and both, you could have heard crickets. They both sat there completely silent.
Well, because they've got nothing to say. And here again, we go back to the standard of truth. There's not even enough proof and evidence to substantiate reasonable suspicion to even detain anybody, let alone impeach the president of the United States, who has the highest office in the land. And this is what really bothers me, because this is being run as a kangaroo court. It is a absolute mockery of the judicial system. And pretty much everybody that's there, I think not everybody, but pretty much everybody that's there is an attorney, okay? And so they're not even using the legal standards of proof. And I think I talked with you recently, and I said, man, I wish I could have gone in there and asked the questions, because they wouldn't even have enough information to discipline an employee of the federal government, let alone try to kick the president of the United States out of office.
Well, and here's the thing, is that the process that they're using is basically whatever Adam Schiff wants it to be on that particular day. He decides what witnesses will be called, the order that they'll be called in, who can even ask them questions. And by the way, he has staff members asking questions for his side, where he will not let duly elected Congress people ask questions on the Republican side. How ludicrous is that?
Well,
and then they refer to things as, you know, extortion, bribery. You can't have these crimes if there are no victims to the crimes. And the people that they are saying are the victims are saying, we don't know anything about it. We're not victims. So it's end of story, but yet they keep going.
Well, and the reason, at least I believe, that they keep going is they need to keep this hot in front of the public to embarrass the president of the United States as much as they can moving forward into the election cycle. Because all of the Republicans have said that this entire impeachment inquiry is DOA. It's dead on arrival, because not only are the Republicans going to vote as one single voice and say, we're not going for this, but I think they already had, in their most recent vote, they had two Democrats that crossed over to the Republican side. So this is going absolutely nowhere. And at the same time that we're wasting all this time and wasting all this energy and wasting all this money, we are not getting the business of America addressed. You know, one of the big things, MSA, you know,
yes,
the Canadian-Mexican United States trade agreement, which could bring almost a half a million jobs.
Absolutely.
To the United States, and tens of billions of dollars, not only for the United States in trade, but for Mexico and for our Canadian, you know, neighbors to the north. Absolutely incredible.
I know. I'm absolutely ashamed of us. And one other thing I just want to say about this impeachment farce is that, you know, they interviewed in their basement room the inspector general, and they have not released that transcript. And I'm sure that it has not been released because it's not in their narrative again. But if they released that, that would reveal what that inspector general knew about the relationship between the whistleblower and Schiff.
Because, and his staff.
Yes,
right.
Because there are a lot of people, Ron, who do know exactly who that whistleblower is. And as the news comes out about the whistleblower, and people have been pretty good about not releasing the name, but they know who it is and they know all about that person. I mean, way back in Trump's administration, he was trying to get fired by people in the administration saying that he was a leaker. So this guy's been a problem for a while. And my understanding that I've heard is that he was set up and handpicked to be the guy to start this, because this is all an act. It's all a pre-written play. And hopefully the outcome would be impeachment. And I think that they really blew it. And Nancy Pelosi, I think you really blew it by jumping into this boat.
Yeah, I agree.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Talk a little bit more about corruption, because You know, Judicial Watch does a great job of looking into corruption in our government, and they file lots and lots of lawsuits for information. And they have been actively involved in the Hillary Clinton email scandal for some time, and they still are, and they continue to get new court orders that allows them to get more information. So that's still being investigated, and they come out with new things all the time on that. So that's, people may think that that issue is over and done, but it's actually not over and done. One of the other things is James Comey. And James Comey did something in taking documents, because he was absolutely against President Trump. He was part of that deep state movement to...
He was part of that 25th Amendment bloodless coup that continues to go on, where people in Trump's administration, I mean, for God's sakes, Kelly and the Secretary of State at the time, what was his name?
Rex Tillerson.
Yeah, Rex Tillerson. Mm-hmm. Okay, and Comey all banding together to try to, you know, have a bloodless coup and knock this president out of office. This stuff is absolutely incredible.
It is incredible. And it's also incredible to me that Trump just keeps trucking on and doing things for the American people. Yeah. But James Comey, when they went to his house and served him with a search warrant, they found all of these classified documents in his home that he shouldn't have had about his conversations with President Trump. And it just reminded me of General Petraeus, Ron, who had the same situation with one document.
With one document, mm-hmm. Okay? And that is the thing about their sense of justice and their style of justice, and then justice against good Americans, okay, like General Petraeus. And so General Petraeus gets convicted, and I think he got probation out of that. I don't think he got any time. And Comey just walks away.
Exactly. So how is this fair? And again, it goes to my question, on which side is the corruption? Because how does Comey get off on this and General Petraeus was convicted of it?
Well, I think it's because Comey is the person that was the former director of the FBI. Okay, so literally you have the fox taking care of the chickens, and the fox is the guy that's, you know, committing all the crimes. And, you know, the chickens are getting prosecuted.
and Comey also leaked to the press classified information, which he wasn't allowed to do either. So, again, the justice is not being served equally on both sides of the aisle. And I find it disturbing because James Comey had an attempt to a conspiracy to get rid of this president. And that is nothing like Petraeus did.
Oh, no, not whatsoever.
And there are continuing investigations into Bruce and Nellie Orr with their Fusion GPS, or I guess that was what it was called.
Right.
Yeah, with their connection and the fact that they were funneling papers here and there to the FBI. Okay, so that is not over with. And from what I understand, Bruce Orr is somewhat cooperating on this because I think he knows he's in some trouble.
Well, you know, and let me give a, you know, I just, you and I donate to Judicial Watch, and I just think it's just a fantastic organization. You know, it's just one that really seeks justice on behalf of the American people.
Exactly. And nonpartisan.
Exactly. Yeah. No.
Justice for people.
If people were to think that Judicial Watch was some sort of conservative organization or Republican organization, it is completely independent. Okay. So, you know, I just love these guys, and I have no problems at all donating money.
Yeah, and there were some other interesting things that they brought out. I always love reading their newsletters because they are fascinating. And if people did donate anything to Judicial Watch, they would get a ton of mail from them.
but it's good stuff have a beautiful newsletter. I mean, there's all sorts of cool stuff. They've got their website. And, you know, once you're a member, you know, like we are, you can get on their website and just read all sorts of great intelligence information that you would never get from, you know, the mainstream media, Fox News,
right.
The Blaze, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just fantastic stuff.
And it's amazing. And it gives you a little bit more insight into kind of our deep state and what's happening in the country. Another thing is that, you know, President Obama, much to my dislike, was welcoming lots and lots of Somalis and Muslims in, and he was withholding entry into our country for Christians during his presidency. Well, in the state of Arizona, they just arrested two refugees that he allowed in that were conspiring to provide material support for ISIS. So, you know, now we've got terrorists that he brought in on his, you know, just uber liberal way of letting anybody come into the country.
Well, you know, look at the San Bernardino terrorists, okay? The husband that was radicalized by the wife, and she came in on that, what's the name of that program, the lottery system or whatever?
Oh, the, yeah.
She had come in on the lottery, and she was a total down-for-the-hood terrorist. From the second she entered, you know, the United States, she was radicalizing her husband. I think she had radicalized him before they even got married, and he had, you know, brought her into this country with the permission of the United States, And they slaughtered all those people in San Bernardino.
Yes. Well, and there have been a lot more than these couple guys from Arizona that were brought in under the Obama administration. He not only let them into the country, but he gave them permanent resident status.
Man.
And they're terrorists, and they are being arrested left and right. And also, you know, just speaking of another good thing that I think Judicial Watch does is they sue cities and counties and states for their sanctuary policies. And they have sued a number of them, and they're currently suing Santa Clara County in California against their sanctuary policy. And, you know, how
which is nuts, because I worked my almost entire law enforcement career in Santa Clara County with the San Jose Police Department. And that county has just gone upside down, and they are involved in so much stuff. Like the sanctuary county, sanctuary cities, stuff like this. And it's really affected their crime rate, and it's affected the morale of the police departments in that county.
And I want to tell you a story from that county, and I want to tell you why this is so important. In 2019, there was a woman named Bambi Larson. She was a resident. She was murdered inside of her home.
I remember that.
In San Jose.
By an illegal alien. I remember that case.
And it was a very brutal murder. Well, that particular illegal alien had lots of prior convictions, including burglary in 2015, convictions for battery of an officer, resisting arrest, entering a property in 2016, conviction for false imprisonment in 2017. He had multiple arrests from 2015 to 18 in Santa Clara County and Los Angeles County, including arrest for possession of drug paraphernalia and methamphetamine, prowling and false identification. At the time that he murdered this poor woman, he was on probation for possession of drug paraphernalia and methamphetamine, false imprisonment, and burglary. And I sent six separate requests to Santa Clara County to take him into custody, and they were refused. So this is why it's important. And I wish that people would really understand that ICE is not out there grabbing, you know, your grandmother off the street that's, right, you know, raising her grandkids or whatever. They are grabbing criminals that we need off the street so that these people don't come into your home and harm you.
You know, and I'm so glad that I retired when I did, because we used to work hand in hand with Border Patrol. There was no ICE when I was working. And I personally, because I was fluent in Spanish, I personally worked with the Border Patrol.
And I wish there was ICE when we were working.
Oh, me too. And, you know, we used to do the border raids, and we used to do all of that, illegal aliens, and we used to round them up. But our priority, even back then when I was working, Lynn, was let's get the criminals off the street first. You know, I'm not particularly interested in Mr. and Mrs. Lopez, who swam across the Rio Grande. I'm more interested in the drug cartel members, in the people smuggling weapons, smuggling drugs, molesting kids, prostitution, pimping, sex trafficking, you know, all of the different things that, you know, the people that we were working against were doing. And by the way, we were also doing undercover stings with Americans that were getting bribed to steal driver's license blanks, passport blanks, all of these types of things, doing fake social security cards, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I think people forget that these were all security issues. And we would do one of the biggest tools that we used in law enforcement was calling the Border Patrol and setting them up and getting an immigration hold with them and getting them on the adjudication protocol for being deported from the United States of America. And that was huge. And we targeted criminals for doing that.
Well, anybody who thinks that law enforcement has time to go out and look for Mr. and Mrs. Lopez is mistaken, because they have their hands full with all of the things that they need to do in a day just to keep communities safe.
Right.
And they now they need to do their community policing as well. So just to keep communities safe, sanctuary cities are making communities so much unsafer. And, you know, there was an article that just came out that I thought was really interesting that says that the majority of federal arrestees are foreigners, and thousands of them are of unknown citizenship. So that non-U.S. citizens commit 42.7% of all federal crimes just in the last year, 2018.
And you know, when they say, just the criminology in me comes up, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But when they say, and we hear this all the time, matter of fact, there's a guy that comes on Fox all the time. He's a Mexican guy, and of course, he's an open borders advocate, and he's constantly on the opposition with Fox, and he keeps representing that there is no disproportionate level of crime with illegal aliens, and that is absolutely false. We've got almost 30,000 illegal aliens now in the United States of America, and just recently I saw where it was costing us upwards of, I think it was $162 billion so far this year, in all of the things that, you know, that we subsidize, and the criminal justice system, and all this other social service, health systems, all of these things. But they only comprise, I think, I can't even remember, but it's such a low rate, maybe 13% of all the people that are in the United States of America. But yet, like you said, 42% of all the people that are arrested, and I think 46% of all the people that are currently in federal prisons are illegal aliens from all different countries.
And these aren't stats that we're making up, Ron.
No.
Anybody can go to two different places. They can go to the U.S. Sentencing Commission and they can look up the stats.
That's where I get mine, by the way.
And they can go to the Justice Department's Bureau of Justice Statistics, BJS, and they can look the stats up. So the crimes on the border with Central Americans have risen 30-fold in the last few years.
Thirtyfold. Can you just wrap your arms around that for a second?
And 30 double times, from Mexico.
30 times
yes.
The normal rate.
Yes.
Okay, in 1 year from Central America.
Well, that may not be in 1 year, but it's recent. Okay, from 1998, so in 10 years, the federal arrest by country of citizenship rose from 28% to 40% for Mexican citizens, and rose from 1% to 20% for citizens of other countries in Central America.
Yeah, and I think people forget, because it just seems that the rhetoric is all talking about Mexico, 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 Mexico. We're talking about all illegal aliens coming into this country.
Yes.
Okay, what's one of the big problems that we're starting to see? And it's a crazy problem that we're starting to see in Texas, in the San Antonio areas. We're getting Congolese illegal aliens and Congolese nationals coming in, you know, and they're illegals.
From the Congo, and you know they didn't walk here.
And what are they doing here?
Yeah.
Okay. And there's nothing, because San Antonio, unfortunately, and I think Bear County is a sanctuary county. San Antonio is a sanctuary city.
Shame on them.
And by the way, one of the major sex trafficking and human trafficking corridors that we have coming into the United States straight through San Antonio up the 35. Okay, right out of Mexico.
But you know that as soon as President Trump started adding to his wall, our arrests went down. So, and not because we're not doing the job, but because less people are coming over and getting over that border.
Yeah, and you know, let's give credit to our just phenomenal governor, Greg Abbott, that said, hey, you know, they're coming into my state, and I think he sent something like 1,000 DPS, or not DPS, but... Department of Public Safety, National Guard down there to protect our southern border in the state of Texas. God bless them.
Yes.
And that's really impacted on our crime statistics in a positive manner in the state of Texas. So God bless our governor.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that these cities start seeing and voting against. And there was recently a city, I want to say in Arizona, Ron, that you and I talked about, that just voted against having it be a sanctuary city.
Tucson.
Oh, Tucson. Okay. Yes. A big city, too.
Yeah. And we're through Tucson all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing in 2020 and 2020 upcoming, Judicial Watch has already sued San Francisco, and that is when their trial will begin about sanctuary cities. So I'm hoping that we reverse this trend. I can't imagine any lawmaker in this country, any elected person being for having a sanctuary city.
But, you know, there's tons of them. And, you know, speaking about, you know, Judicial Watch, if people joined Judicial Watch, they would get an entire manual, actually a catalog of all the counties and all the cities in the United States that are sanctuary counties and sanctuary cities. And also, Judicial Watch just does such an amazing job. They have all the county and city ordinances that talk about not cooperating with ICE. Okay, so you can literally read the ordinance that has been, you know, voted on in a city or a county in the United States. It takes care of all 50 states. So if you like, for instance, if you lived in Tucson and you lived in San Jose, and I looked both of those cities up, you can find exactly what county and or city ordinances were enacted and voted on in the city or county to create a sanctuary environment. It's just absolutely amazing.
Well, I think that people, when they vote this next election, they really need to think about, you know, the future of this country and how they want where they live and where they bring their children up to be for them. You don't want to be murdered in your house like this poor woman was. You want to be safe. And therefore, whether the criminal is somebody that is from the United States, from Central America, from Mexico, from Russia, from Europe, I don't care where they're from. You want that person to be either in prison or deported so that they can't harm somebody again.
Exactly. And our people need to be protected.
Yes.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com. Well, have you been catching the Kanye West religious experience?
I have. It's really interesting to me.
You know, it's such a switch up for that guy, you know, and Apparently, he's talking about having found Jesus Christ while he was in the hospital, suffering from sort of a mental breakdown. Yeah, mental breakdown.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty interesting.
It is interesting. And, you know, I absolutely believe that those things can happen. And I certainly think he's in a better direction than he was in the past. And, you know, people are really, really taking to him in this. He was recently at Joel Osteen's church, and that church holds more people than any church in the United States. And I guess that he really filled it. And I see that he has that group of dancers and people that come with him.
Well, he brought an entire choir ensemble with him.
Yeah, and boy, they rock it.
Oh, no, they did. He packed that gigantic church, which I think was a stadium, right? It holds 20,000 people.
No, I thought it holds 45,000 people.
Well, I'll tell you what. They said at least 20,000 people were there.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, those are the types of crowds that the Pope gets. But I listened to it, and Joel Osteen's church just happens to be my favorite church as far as hearing sermons. He didn't give a sermon. Joel gave the sermon, but Kanye talked about how he found God, and, you know, more power to him. Like you said, anybody that opens their heart up to Jesus Christ and accepts him as Lord deserves to be forgiven for past transgressions. And I hope it's not a marketing ploy, because I know he has a brand new album out.
But his album is all religious music,
right?
And he said that he will never record the other kind of music again, that he's going to stay.
Which is the hip hop and violent rap music,
yeah,
and drugs and guns. And
I think he's going to stay in this direction. He seems to be happier. It seems to make him happy. And I think that that's really telling. And, you know, there's a joy that you get, Ron, from doing good for other people. And in singing rap and in singing the things that he was singing about, I don't know if I'd call rap singing, but whatever it is, it's rap. You know, it's not something that makes you feel happy. Yes, you get a lot of money and that can do things, but I've always said, and my feeling is that money is not something that makes you happy. There are other intangible things in life that make you happy. And unless you have those, the money isn't going to help. In fact, it can probably make it worse.
Well, you know, we're always seeing things on television about people in the entertainment and the sports industry that have a great deal of money. And a lot of those people are train wrecks, and they don't seem to be happy at all. And as a matter of fact, they end up with a lot of mental health issues. They end up with a lot of drug abuse, just a lot of different things going on in their life, none of which are positive.
Well, you know, that reminds me of the show that I like to watch on TV called Marriage Boot Camp, or now, right now it's Family Boot Camp.
And
they're all wealthy people, and they're all involved in some sort of entertainment. They're in rap. They're in Housewives of this or that.
They're in reality TV.
Yeah, in some version of reality TV. And these are people that have money, but oh my gosh, you always ask me why I watch it. And I say because they are such train wrecks in life, and I can see that the money doesn't make them happy, and it doesn't fix their problems, and it doesn't fix who they are in any way, shape, or form. And these are not happy people. These are people with lots of problems. And it always makes me appreciate what I have in my life and what I have in my marriage, because I understand that it's not about those tangible things that happiness comes. So I think Kanye West is onto something. I'm hoping he can teach the rest of his Kardashian family that same type of value system. And, you know, maybe they would all be happier because they've all had some issues of this type and that type. That being said, one of the things that happened from there was that somebody had promised to sponsor with, I believe it was 1,000 Bibles, and they have already given out over 10,000 Bibles. So when in the same week I read that the sale of Bibles is going down, all of a sudden, he's bringing it back up.
Well, you know, he is, what do you call it? He's a social influencer, right? Is that what those people call? He's a social influencer. Well, you know, more power to him, and I hope he sticks with it, okay? I mean, I hope he sticks with it. So, you know, speaking of switching things up, I want to talk about something that I almost never talk about, but I've got plenty to talk about tonight, about the NFL.
Okay.
And the thuggery in the NFL, and specifically the Cleveland Browns defensive end named Myles Garrett. Did you see on television what he did to Mason Rudolph, who's the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I did see it, and with a disclaimer that I saw it on the news, I did not see it watching football, because ever since they started taking a knee, I've never watched a football game again.
And I'm going to talk to you in a minute about why I stopped watching NFL football, but this just kind of reemphasizes why I don't watch the NFL anymore, and I'm boycotting it. Well, anyway, you said you saw it, but I don't know if you saw that what Myles Garrett did was he collided with the Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, Mason Rudolph, and then grabbed his helmet and ripped it off his head and then smacked him on the naked head with the QB's own helmet.
I saw that.
Okay. Well, here's what's important to know, size-wise. Now Rudolph is a pretty tall guy, but Malus Garrett, that guy is 6'4", 271 pounds. So the guy's almost 300 pounds. And I saw the muscles on this guy's arm. Can you imagine getting hit with an NFL helmet by a guy like that who's ticked off and just hitting you just as hard as he can bash your head in? And the thing that's worrisome on so many different levels, but on a medical level, is Mason Rudolph had recently had a concussive injury.
Oh.
And so he's literally on the mend from a concussive injury, and then Malus Garrett goes ahead and smacks him in the head.
So he probably has another concussive
with a helmet
injury.
Well, boy, I'll tell you what. And I mean, it's just been all over the media, and people are chiming in one way or another. I saw it, and I just believe that is physical criminal assault. I believe it's assault with a deadly weapon. You hit the person with a bludgeon. I don't see the difference between hitting somebody with a rock, hitting them with a piece of wood, hitting them with a baton. You hit them with something that could cause serious bodily injury or even death, depending on how hard you hit them with it. So anyway, so there is a former football player by the name of Jack Brewer, and now he's a columnist, and he writes for Fox News every once in a while. And Brewer played for the Minnesota Vikings and also played for the Arizona Cardinals. And I think he played maybe about six seasons. And I read his column, and his column was saying, look, Garrett doesn't need to be arrested and prosecuted for criminal behavior. He's suffering enough. What the NFL did the following day is they indefinitely suspended him from football. So, I mean, he's going to lose money for that. But they also, because both teams got into it after Garrett smacked Rudolph, they fined both teams $250,000. Okay, which is no small amount. But I'll tell you, in all the years that I've watched footballs, and I've seen some pretty nefarious things, some criminal things, I've never seen anything like that. And to me, the NFL is becoming a house of thugs. All right, now I know a lot of people are going to probably disagree with me, but when I see stuff like that, and you know, I've written a couple of articles about how many of these NFL guys get arrested on drug and gun charges and domestic violence, and we had one even arrested for murder a few years ago. I mean, We don't need this in any kind of sport. And when Jack Brewer says, you know, there's the violent nature of football and they develop a warlike mentality. And I almost thought he was kind of trying to equate NFL football with people in the military going to war, which would have set my hackles up. I had to read the article two or three times. And I must say that after reading it that many times, I changed my opinion. But you know, they get these guys all jacked up, but look at the guys that you're dealing with here, okay? Because you're already dealing with guys that are, you know, taking steroids or they're all jacked up and they're so huge and they're hitting it. You have two large men running at each other as hard as they can, as fast as they can, and then physically smacking into each other and all these concussive brain injuries and all this other stuff. And then you get some idiot like Garrett hitting a quarterback.
No, Garrett was the one hit, wasn't he?
No. Garrett's the guy that hit Rudolph. He hit Mason Rudolph, the QB. Okay. And anyway, so Mr. Brewer, I just disagree with you because there's no need for any of that, and I think he should be criminally prosecuted. You got to do something to mitigate the bad behavior.
Well, the quarterback doesn't want to prosecute him either.
I know.
He said he's fine. But, you know, I mean, to your point, I've noticed a lot of thuggery in the NFL, and I do think that there's that there should be more attention paid to the morals clauses in these people's contracts and how they behave on and off the field, because after all, they're getting paid a lot of money and they set an example, or they should be setting an example for young people. And the example that many of the players in the NFL, certainly not all of them, haven't been good. And then you have other ones that are really good, like
they do,
you know,
a
like the Peyton Mannings of the world.
Right. And they do a lot of good, and they give a lot back to the communities.
Yes.
And they do so much for, you know, for children that are in need, and I mean, all sorts of people. And when you get these guys, these thugs like Malus Garrett, it just ruins everything. And it just, that's the type of thing for me personally. I don't want to watch professional football because they're either taking a knee, like Colin Kaepernick, who I want to talk about next, or they're taking drugs, or they're beating up their old ladies, and they're beating other people. They're possessing guns, they're disrespecting law enforcement, and I just don't think we need them. But, you know, the truth be told, the NFL administration, the people, the NFL commissioner and stuff, those guys are just a bunch of sissies, and they're letting, you know, they're letting the inmates run the asylum.
Well, and that's true. And so Colin Kaepernick, speaking of inmates running the asylum, he had a chance to try out once again for being on a football team, and he made it a media show, and then I believe he changed the location 30 minutes before he was supposed to have his tryout, and there's a whole lot of talk about that.
Well, it's just the nature of this guy. First of all, I don't think this guy really wants to play football. I really don't think he does. I think he wants to have social media celebrity. That's what I think. I think he's, and I've written about him, and I wrote a great article about him back in 2016 on my drronmartinelli.com site. And the guy, to me, is a fake social justice warrior. I remember, because my folks had a ranch out in Central California, and he was going to the university, Stanislaus State University there in Turlock, right next door to where my folks had their place. And he's raised, his dad abandoned him, who was black, his mom was white. He was raised by white grandparents and given every single opportunity to succeed. And you never heard any of this social warrior stuff from this guy when he was at Stanislaus State. Then he gets picked up by UCR, University of Nevada, Reno, and he goes up to UNR and he plays, and that's where he gets discovered by the San Francisco 49ers. No social, you know, justice warrior anything. Then he meets this girl, and who's a Muslim, and I think she's like radically converted this guy, and that's where all of this is coming from. And so he goes out to work out, and he wears a Kunta Kinte t-shirt from, you know, the old movie where Kunta Kinte is a slave. And that's his way of sticking it to the NFL and saying that you made me a slave, and you've made all of us football players slaves. Then, like you said, he changes the location. Then he has his own camera crew in there and basically kind of kicks out the NFL camera crew. And so he's lining. Here is a guy that's purportedly trying to get a job back in football, and he's trying to call all the shots and run the narrative. I'm telling you, anybody that would hire this guy is making a huge mistake. He has not changed. He believes he's right and everybody else is wrong. And there is no reason for me to watch NFL football.
Okay. Well, with that, I think that I've run out of time to talk about McDonald's once again. So I will have to wait, and people will have to wait to hear about McDonald's. But what I will say is that congratulations once again to President Trump. The stock market hit another all-time high recently, going to 28,000. And that is just another win in my book for President Trump. Now, on the loser list is President Obrador,
who's lost the market share of ratings. His ratings are down with the Mexican people. But that's a lot. 10% dump in like 2 weeks from that incident where the Mormon family, the LeBaron family, were just slaughtered.
Yes. And the reason was because of his response to that was that he refused the United States help, and he said he wanted, I think he said something like hugs, not
he wanted hugs, not guns.
Yeah.
Bullets. So hugs, not bullets.
Hugs, not bullets. He said that they had tried that and it didn't work. And so they were going with the hugs. And I got to tell you, the hugs are just not going to work.
No. And when people think of the tens of thousands of people that are killed every single year in Mexico alone, you know, you got to just change things. And I hope people really go on America Out Loud and read the article that I wrote, Lynn, dealing with should we reconsider cartels as international terrorist organizations. I think I made a couple of good points. What'd you think?
Well, I absolutely thought it was an excellent article and so true. And I think that people would do well to read that article. You know, and I don't know if we even mentioned it before, but I think that you saw, as I did, that they caught a Russian guy coming over and that they have
got in a gunfight with him.
Yeah. And that in Chihuahua, Mexico, they have a entire jihadi Muslim camp there.
Oh, we're going to have to do a little research and come back and discuss that. Right. Just 8 miles from the border.
Yes.
Out of El Paso, Juarez area.
Yes.
Right. Again, you know, looking at, you know, El Paso, Texas, looking at Juarez, Mexico, and you can't get any closer than 8 miles from the United States border, and a jihadi terrorist camp. And the cartel members are sneaking those guys into the United States of America. Build the wall.
Build the wall.
Build the wall.